Coming up this week on The Course of Life, we'll have a recap of the Wyndham Championship final regular season event of the PGA Tour season, and we're previewing the playoffs beginning this week. Plus, quick little debate review from last week's events on the Democratic side, and a little Red Sox-Yankees trash-talking, mostly going to be done on Mike's end, and a really cool chat that we have with Alejandra Yaneza, professional golfer in the Symetra Tour, represented Mexico in the Olympics. She talks all about that and more. But first, we tee off each episode reminding you about the first tee shot, not the first swing of the day, but the sugar-free, gluten-free drink that helps you focus on the golf course for the entirety of your round. Elevate your game and try First Tee Shot right now by going to firstteeshot.com and entering our promo code COURSE to receive 20% off of your purchase today. First Tee Shot is the pre-golf drink that keeps you locked in. Again, that's promo code COURSE, that's C-O-U-R-S-E, to receive 20% off of your purchase today. And also, if you're looking for any golf instruction aids, discount deals on clubs, merch, or just gifts for someone special in your golfing life, be sure to head to shotshavershop.com and enter our promo code SHAVER for 25% off. Again, shotshavershop.com and our promo code SHAVER for the best deals in golf to help out your game today.
Interwebs, and welcome to another edition of Course of Life presented by Izzo Golf, the podcast where we talk about everything happening on the PGA Tour, plus other things that interest us from the world of sports and pop culture. I'm Michael, he's Alex, and Alex, Poston posted a score on Sunday
in Poston.
North Carolina.
It was beautiful.
Did. And he won. He did what everyone tried to do all season, going low on Sunday. Yeah. And he won.
We're big fans of just the random guy that posts really, really early. And I love the camera waiting on them, just idly watching in the clubhouse, watching their life flash before their eyes, preparing to see if they win. And that's exactly what we got on Sunday. Literally, his name is Poston, JT Poston, and he posted the winning score, a 62 on Sunday, 22 under, waited around, and it was good enough in the end to get him his first win on the PGA Tour. So he is very much into the playoffs. And my pick, Victor Hovland, finished fourth. Nice little week for him as well, too, to cap off a good rookie season. And fan favorite and local favorite, Webb Simpson, one shot short as well. But a nice win overall for a guy who a lot of people probably haven't heard of, but he'll be around for a few years now on the PGA Tour because of that performance on Sunday.
Yeah, I know. I had never heard of him. But there are some guys that we heard of, like, because they didn't do well enough at the Wyndham Championship, they lost their tour card because, like we said, this was the last event of this season before the playoffs begin. The big name on there, of course, is Bill Haas, no longer a PGA Tour card holder.
Yeah, FedEx Cup champion. You remember he won the $10 million very famously. His ball in the 72nd hole was on the edge of a water hazard. He quite literally got on the edge of the water and had a miraculous up and down to win the FedEx Cup several years ago. And now he is without a tour card. So one of the notables that did not make it, and we'll have to kind of fight and claw to get back on tour next season. Also, Martin Keimer, a two-time major champion, has lost his tour card. A fan favorite of mine, Bo Hostler, a guy that graduated from UT, not graduated, but played at UT and spends a lot of his time here in Austin where I am, lost his card as well. Kind of a very heartfelt post on Instagram about, you know, he had everything under his control. You know, he did what he did. He can't, you know, reminisce too much on the season that wasn't, but just got to get back on the grind and try and get back to the big show for next year for him.
A lot of names that are missing, but of course, 125 got into the FedEx Cup playoffs. They start this weekend. It's a brand new format this year. They'll be in New York to get it started. Let's talk about this format real quick before we get into the actual Northern Trust at Liberty National. They'll be starting on Thursday. And that is, of course, we lost an event. And to us, the one that's near and dear to us, we lost the event at TPC Boston.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but it'll be back every other year, so we will be back in Boston next year. So it'll be three events. The real big change here, though, is that when they get to East Lake for the Tour Championship in Atlanta, everything changes. The points go away, and you get this staggered scoring start.
So essentially, the winner is going to be what? What, like the leader, the top seed is going to be entering the tournament at 10 under par. Explain this to me specifically.
So pretty much, let's say right now, let's take the top 10 right now in the FedEx Cup. So number one is Brooks Koepka.
Yeah.
So let's say Brooks Koepka is number one still when it gets time to start off and tee off in number one at East Lake. He's going to start at 10 under par.
Start the tournament at 10 under par.
Start the tournament at 10 under par. The number two seed will start at 8 under par and so on and so forth all the way down until we get to the 26 to 30 seeds. We're going to open the tournament at even par. So pretty much what they're doing, which is stuff we've talked about a lot on this podcast and just between ourselves a lot over the years, is, man, it'd be really nice if the guy who won the tour championship is the same guy who won the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, they have the terribly awkward scenario in past years where there's two different champions. You know,
we had it last year.
I mean, last year was the king because Tiger Woods won the FedEx Cup championship. But he did not win the FedEx Cup. Justin Rose did in a very awkward manner, like right before Tiger, like before the mob scene. It was a very strange scene. So they're basically trying to avoid that at all costs. And they're going to do it with this method here of scoring. Like you mentioned, so guys who are all the way down at 26 to 30, they're going to start 10 shots back. So yes, Mike, every single person that makes it to East Lake in the final 30 of this three-week playoff event of the PGA Tour, they'll have a chance to win technically, but they're going to have a hell of a weekend at East Lake in order to get it done if you're 26 to 30 possession.
Yeah, they really would. And it's certainly possible for those guys all the way at the end to win. They got to have that hell of a weekend. But I think to a great extent, too, people like NBC isn't going to have all these different charts and graphs and things going on trying to figure out who's going to go where and what could happen depending on if this guy's at 300 par versus 400 par. So it takes maybe some of the fun out of it, but at the same time, it's a lot more approachable, I think, for all of us. I think maybe that's the big thing.
Definitely. Shout out Steve Sands of the Golf Channel. That's the guy every year who gets like his job is to man the FedEx Cup board and go through the scenario. Okay, with that missed putt, now this, and this. let's watch one more shot and then come back to me and I'll tell you how everything's changed. So
what's he going to do now?
He's just going to have to go back to his quiet job as an on-course reporter. You know, what a tough life he leads. Yeah.
Oh man, so difficult.
Yep. So that's the start of the playoffs here. 3 weeks, like you mentioned, shrunken from 4 to 3. So they start it at Liberty National. Really cool course, Mike. I tweeted out earlier today. My Twitter's at Course of Life One, and he's at MWRINC. But there's going to be some really cool images all week, whether you're just watching on your phone or on TV. Liberty National, literally backed by the entire Manhattan skyline, Statue of Liberty, World Trade. Everything just sits right behind the course. Really cool backdrop for the start of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's, it still is one of those courses that's just great to watch. Nothing like having the Big Apple as your backdrop. It's going to be interesting to see who can really contend this week. Of course, Brooks Koepka is number one on the FedEx Cup standings. Like we said, the question is, can he win another non-major again this year? He's going to have to win. Obviously, he's going to have to win the Tour Championship if he wants to win it all. So is he just going to kind of sit around there and just do like second, third, just be top five these next 2 weeks and then break it out big for the Tour?
Right, because in theory, I guess the Tour Championship's the one that really matters to him. Because like we said, with his last win at the FedEx St. Jude a couple weeks ago, he's only in it for the big money, it's clear. Yeah. So maybe a 10 million bonus plus a few more on the side. That'll get him going in a couple weeks time. But it'll be interesting to see who gets that head start on the first week of the FedEx Cup playoffs. One other thing I want to really quickly shout out the ladies this past weekend.
Yeah.
If you flipped on NBC, we had the Women's British Open and a really cool winner. You can watch video from Sunday's dramatic win. But the Smiling Cinderella was her nickname. A 20-year-old Hanako Shibuno from absolutely nowhere, Mike, wins her first LPGA tournament, wins her first major in dramatic style with a birdie on the 18th hole. A 20-year-old who quite literally never played golf outside of Asia in her life ever wins the Women British Open, 5-year exemption, all that good stuff, and a really cool Cinderella story for the ladies game as well. Had to be shouted out.
It certainly is. It's, again, one of those things that we just all got to watch this. There's still great golf going on, even if the men aren't playing or even when the men are playing. There's great golf going on out there.
So young, too. It's insane. Yeah. Like, I mean, imagine if a 20-year-old did this. I mean, imagine if Matthew Wolff went out and won a major championship, right now at the age of 20. That would be the level of excitement that we're seeing in the women's game. So just another young champion in the game and a very impressive win with that birdie on the 18th for Shibuno, the Smiling Cinderella. Great nickname for sure.
Like you said, we'll be watching everything that goes on in the world of golf on Twitter. You're at Course of Life One. I'm at MWRINC. Let's talk a little pop politics. Let's talk about the debates from last week.
Yeah, I was knee deep in it. I know you weren't, but I was all over it.
I think it's hilarious between the two of us, because I think certainly during college, I was the one who was maybe more politically minded.
Absolutely. Yes.
I really could care less right now. I think next month when we get down to 5-6 candidates being on that debate stage, I'm going to start caring. We're getting closer to go time here. Once we really start to know who's really in this, so I don't need to listen to I don't need to listen to Andrew Yang, but he actually looks like he's going to qualify for these next debates.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with the theater of like all these people trying to get a word in edgewise. I don't know if that's like the sports talk radio fan in
it
me,
but
I just love them all trying to argue the same thing at the same time. It's fantastic theater if you're just kind of watching from an outsider perspective. And you're right, we got to shout out Yang because I wrote down a couple lines that really hit me from the debate. No matter where you sit politically, or whatever your thoughts are in the future of the country, Andrew Yang does have a banger of a line, Mike. His go-to punchline at the end of debates is not left, not right, but forward. That's pretty gangster. I'm not gonna lie. It kind of sent a chill down my spine when I first heard it. And then the other one, Mike, I love when Julian Castro finishes every debate with an adios to Donald Trump. He says it with such authority. It really gets me going. So a lot of theater with the debates right now. But like you mentioned, you're waiting for it to whittle down to the real candidates. And I think that's going to happen. So right now it looks like potentially 7 or 8 candidates will qualify for the next round of debates in September. It's looking like Joe Biden, Beto O'Rourke, Cory Booker, Bernie Sanders, Liz Warren, Mayor Pete, Kamala Harris and Amy Klobuchar, and a maybe on Andrew Yang. We're going to find out if he's that last guy to make the cut, Mike. So hopefully we get one more not left, not right forward from Yang, but that could be his last run. So we'll see what the whittled down field looks like come September for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure. All, you know, a lot of these big names, those top five are the ones that are pulling in double digits in New Hampshire right now.
Right, primaries.
So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see even the ones that are able to qualify for September, are they even still going to be around come September? Are they going to get pushed out by these bigger names? So we'll keep an eye on it. We will tweet out every once in a while something we find interesting and hilarious.
Sure. Of course. Yeah, absolutely. And definitely going to probably take a little bit of a hiatus as we head into football season here, but next debate September, mark your calendars. We'll get you ready for those in only the manner that we can, of course. But first, Mike, let's get to a milestone for us. Our first Olympian on the podcast. We have an Olympian talking to us about some really cool things that happened in her career recently.
Yeah, you know, you're somehow able to get major leaguers, you got PGA Tour winners.
I'm on a heater.
I don't know if it's that you are paying these people, because if you are, I don't know where the money's coming from. It's certainly not in the budget for the podcast. But like you said, this week's guest is a professional golfer. She's from Mexico. She played for her country in the 2016 Olympic Games in Rio. Now she's on the Symetra Tour trying to get her LPGA Tour card. This is all in your chat with Alejandra Yaniza. But first, the Course of Life, as always, is brought to you by Izzo Golf. And coming soon, it's the Izzo Golf Swami Voice. This brand new golf GPS offers total versatility. The built-in voice feature can deliver audible distances as you prepare to attack the pin. See and hear distances to the front, center, and back of green. The Swami Voice clip easily attaches to your hat or belt, keeping you looking stylish on the course while improving your game. With 38,000 preloaded golf courses worldwide, you are sure to find the course you're playing at. No download or subscription fees necessary. Enjoy features like shot distance and digital scorecard. For more info, visit www.izzo.com. Plus, right now, listeners to this podcast can save an additional 25% off their order with the promo code PODCAST. Go get your personalized bag and hit the course in style. Again, that's promo code PODCAST at www.izzo.com. Izzo Golf, innovation and features designed for golfers by golfers.
Next up on the tee is a professional golfer, originally from Mexico City, also out of Dallas, Texas, who competed in the 2016 Olympic Games and has played on the LPGA and Symetra Tour regularly. Alejandra Yaneza joins the Course of Life. Alejandra, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about your background and growing up in Mexico City. I'm curious, with it being such a large metropolis and one of the largest cities in the world, what was the experience like for you as a kid growing up there? And in terms of you learning to play the game, is golf popular, very popular there with kids? Or, you know, what was your story getting into the game of golf?
I started when I was 6 years old because my dad was he really liked to play golf, so I would just go with him on the weekends. We belonged to a club because unfortunately there's still not a lot of public courses down there, even though
right. They're
starting to be more. But I would just go over there on the weekends, and I fell in love with the game right away. So then. I joined the kids clinic that they had at the club, and I would go there. I think I started out going there 3 times a week, and then on weekends I practiced with my dad. It was great. I was doing other sports. I was in gymnastics, swimming, just a little bit of everything, but golf was the one that I liked the most. And then I started playing in the Mexico City Junior Tour. And that's when I got my first taste of competitive golf. That's when I liked it the most. I loved the challenge of competing and having to focus. That's what I'm doing now. So I'm very happy that I have the opportunity.
Very cool. And I'm curious, at what age or what point did you know that you wanted to, you know, put the other sports to the side and focus on golf? How old were you?
I actually remember the exact moment. It was national. It was a national junior tournament in Guadalajara, and I didn't win tournaments right away. I would come in third, fourth, and so I would make goals of like who I needed to beat, you know, to get a better ranking next time and better ranking next time. And I would just know what I had to improve for the following tournament. And that was, that was a very exciting tournament coming down the stretch. I was tied for first place, and I made like a 20 footer on the last hole to force a playoff. And just the adrenaline of that moment, even before the playoff, I was like, this is what I want to do when I grow up. I want to keep playing competitive golf. So I was 11 years old.
Yeah, very cool. Everyone, no matter kind of what level of golf you are, you always have those moments of shots that you hit when you were a kid that you still remember to this day. So very neat to hear yours particularly. And so from there, from your successful junior career in golf, you went to play college at the University of Arizona, correct? As a Wildcat?
Yes. I was there for four years.
What was the adjustment like to living and playing competitively in the United States regularly in college tournaments for you?
It was definitely a learning experience, a very different, going to a different country after high school. But it was amazing when I got there. I was so happy and just amazed at how much sports are supported here in the U.S. because in Mexico I struggled throughout high school. I ended up having to do homeschool because they wouldn't let me miss school to go to golf tournaments. So I was just very happy to see how in college everyone was excited about sports and how passionate my teammates were about the game. I didn't grow up playing with a lot of girls who liked golf as much as I did. So it was very cool to find that in college.
Yeah, in Arizona, the University of Arizona, they're known very well. You know, the football program has improved. The basketball program has been nationally renowned. The softball program has won championships before. So it must have been very interesting to go from an environment where there wasn't a ton of competition to seeing, you know, the greatest athletes in the country all in one spot, for sure. So I'm curious, after those 4 years, what was the kind of the mindset for you, and what was the plan, you know, once you graduated? Did you know immediately that you wanted to play professionally and try and make it to the Symetra and the LPGA Tour, or was there thoughts of maybe doing something else after your college career?
No, I think since before I started and all the way until I finished, I knew I wanted to turn pro. So when I graduated, I knew I played Q school while I was still finishing my degree, so that I could turn pro right after school was over. I knew throughout all those 4 years that I wanted to play professionally, and a lot of the girls that I played college golf with were now on the LPGA or the Symetra Tour, I wanted to join them up there.
Very cool. And so for our fans who kind of understand exactly how the tours work, explain, you know, how it is being out on the Symetra Tour. Essentially, there's a money list with the Symetra Tour and their year-long competition to get LPGA Tour cards. What has that been like for you, the experience of being on the mini tours and learning and adjusting to the travel playing professional golf?
It was a very shocking experience when I graduated, because in college we are kind of spoiled. Like, the school takes care of your travel and you stay in nice hotels, you eat at good restaurants, and everything's taken care of. You just show up when they tell you to show up, and then you get on the plane and go to the tournament. And then when you turn pro, it's like, okay, now I have to pay for all those flights, those hotels.
You have to pay for all the bills.
All the meals, everything. So it was very different. And like, there's a whole business side to it where you have to find sponsors and be very good at, you become like a pretty good travel agent to book all your travel. And the first year I drove my car to most of the tournaments. So we would have like 10 or 12 hour drives sometimes in between events. And I traveled with Lily Alvarez, another Mexican player.
Okay, yeah.
And she helped me out a lot during those first years to know how the tour worked. And so I played on the Symetra Tour for 2 years, and then I got partial status on Q School. So the Symetra Tour, you have to get top 10 to get to the LPGA in the whole year. And then if you are not in that, then you go to Q School. And then when I played it, it was top 20 got their full card, and then 21st through 45th got conditional status. So I got a few events to play on the LPGA and 2014, and I did pretty good on those first ones. So then if you do well enough, then you get reshuffled, and then you can play more tournaments during that
Absolutely.
Year. So that's what I did.
And it's definitely a work in progress. Obviously, you did have a very notable top 15 finish in an event in 2014. And obviously, I know you want to get back there with full status on the LPGA Tour. But now let's go back to, you know, a few years ago. Now, growing up, golf was never part of the Olympics. You know, for someone who's similarly aged to you, it was never even to be considered to be an Olympic sport. And that all kind of changed in the last 5 to 10 years. I'm curious, at what point did you know or have an idea that you might be able to qualify for the Olympic Games and play for your home country, Mexico?
It was actually an amazing news to hear, because when I was little, like I mentioned, I was in gymnastics, and it was my dream to go to the Olympics. And I always loved the challenge of being better, getting better, being better than you were yesterday. And But then I decided to go with golf, and it wasn't involved in the Olympics. So when I heard the news, I think it was in 2013 or 14. And at that time, I heard, because I was one of the highest ranked in Mexico, that I had a chance. So it was definitely a lot of motivation. And then in 2015, I won a big event on the Symetra Tour in South Carolina. And that took me like a lot higher in the rankings, and
right,
and pretty much secured my spot for the Olympics. So it was an amazing feeling. I didn't expect that tournament to give me that opportunity, but yeah, when I heard that I had a really good chance to go, it was really exciting.
Very cool. And let's flash back to that week when you arrived and playing the week at the course in Rio designed specifically for the Olympic Games. What was that like for you, playing that course, getting to know it, and just the week in general? What are some special memories you have specifically from that week?
Yeah, it's definitely different than any other week I've had. Just arriving and seeing like all the organization and getting to the Olympic Village, that was really cool. And just seeing the top athletes in the world all around you, that was such a cool feeling, because we're not always included in golf as athletes. So,
right, so yes.
to be part of that group during that week was awesome. The dining hall was huge. And just talking to other athletes, we heard like swimmer stories and track and field stories, and made friends with people from all over the world. And we got to see some of the competitions. Like, we would do our practice rounds in the morning, and then in the afternoon we went to watch some of the meets. And then I remember on Thursday, the first round, they announced my name on the tee and my country, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm playing in the Olympics. This is so cool. And my whole family was there. So it was a very cool experience. The golf course was amazing. I loved the design, and it was in really good shape. So it was a very cool week.
So one of the notable things I remember from the Olympics is American golfer Ricky Fowler participating, and he actually got the five Olympic rings tattooed on his arm. Did you get a Olympic tattoo, or do you have any sort of memento from the week at all?
I didn't. I thought about it for a long time, but no, I haven't done it. We did get a really cool phone with the, like, it was an Olympic version. It was a Galaxy phone with the rings on it and all the colors on it. That was just for the athletes. So that was cool. And yeah, we got shirts and hats and everything. And then the comforters that they put on our beds, they told us we could take them because they had all the logos for all the sports.
Very neat.
I still have that and all my head covers and shoes. Yeah, so I have a lot of stuff from that week.
Very cool. So I guess let's, you know, maybe if we can get back in 2020 in Japan, maybe that would be the opportunity for the tattoo. I'm curious, what do you have to do in terms of where you're sitting right now to possibly earn yourself a trip back to the Olympics in 2020 and get that opportunity again?
Yeah. Actually, that was a deal I made with myself. I was like, if I go to Tokyo, then I'll for sure get the tattoo.
Love it. Nice.
But yeah, right now it's a little tougher. There's a lot of golfers that have come up from Mexico. And I think Lorena Ochoa was a big influence in that, where she really
definitely
made the game grow. And so right now I believe I'm in fourth or fifth place in Mexico. So I have to have a good finish this year on the Symetra Tour and hopefully get a win that will take me up the rankings and then get on the LPGA, because right now Gabby Lopez and Maria Fassi, I think, are the top ranked, and they are doing pretty good on the LPGA. So I have to get up there next year and then get some good tournaments at the beginning of the year so that I can get a an opportunity to go.
Absolutely. So it sounds like the two goals for 2020 are Japan and an LPGA tour card. So I'm curious, what parts of your game are you working on the most specifically? And what are you practicing a little bit extra to hopefully improve your status from the Symetra Tour to the LPGA and get to that next level?
Actually, this off season, I made a lot of changes to my game because I knew I had to step it up a little bit. So I made some swing changes where I lengthened my backswing a little bit and tried to increase speed. So I got more distance off the tee, and I got some new equipment. So my irons are going further because I think the golf courses are getting longer with more people working out and golf becoming Definitely. More of a athlete sport. So yeah, I've made changes in the gym too to improve resistance and strength and the mental game. I'm working a lot on my mental game to get some good results, and of course the short game is key to have wins and top 10 finishes. So I would say right now I'm focusing a lot on the mental aspect of it and the short game to try to have a good finish of the season.
Absolutely. That's a good combo to have for sure. For our last few minutes, let's get into some quicker questions for you and topics that we like to bring up on the podcast a lot. We love talking about highlights for career. You mentioned that notable putt when you were just a little girl and you decided that you wanted to play golf for the rest of your life competitively. I'm curious, what is the best round of your life? What course was it at, and what was the score, whether it's your career low score or maybe a winning round for a tournament where you were on top?
It was a Wildfire golf course in Scottsdale. I shot, I believe, was 64. Yeah, 64. Wow. And it was a Cactus Tour event that I was fighting for the first place, and that happened to be my last round. I just kind of got in the zone and made lots of birdies and I was able to win the tournament. So that's been my lowest round. That was
very cool.
In 2013, I think.
It's funny. We actually just had a guest a few weeks ago, Morgan Reimler, who was on with us, and she mentioned that course as one of her favorites in the Scottsdale area. So that must be a place to play for sure. I'm curious, if you had to choose, these are kind of some either or questions. When you're playing around, would you prefer to birdie the first hole, or would you prefer to birdie the last hole of your round?
The last hole, for sure.
Yeah, walk away with the good taste in your mouth, you know?
Yeah.
Very cool. And then the next one is, we've been talking a lot about playing at sunrise early in the morning, or do you prefer to go out at sunset right before it gets dark?
I'd say sunset. I practice, growing up, I practiced a lot in the afternoons, obviously because of school, but I just loved playing when the sun was setting. And of course, if you're playing well, then you're playing late on Sunday. So I'd rather play at sunset.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it as well, for sure. And Alejandro, in your bio on the LPGA website, you list cooking as one of your top hobbies. I'm curious, if you're having friends over for an evening, what's like your signature dish that you love to make when you have company over?
It's probably fajitas, because everyone likes Mexican food. Or some zucchini pasta, like something healthy like that.
Yeah, that's a good combo, you know, especially after you've, you know, stuffed your face with five fajitas. So it makes sense. And last question is, we love talking about, we're not the greatest golfers on this podcast, so our favorite hole is the 19th hole on every golf course. So I'm curious, if you have a good round and you birdie the last hole, like you mentioned, and you get into the clubhouse, what's your favorite like meal or drink that you like to have after a great day on the course?
Well, in Mexico, we would always have tacos at the turn or when we were done. So if I had to choose, it would be that. But if I'm here, I like to have a good hamburger when I finish, or and a Mexican beer. I like Mexican beer.
Absolutely. Great answer for sure. Can always get down with a burger or a taco. So before we leave, Alejandro, I'd love for you to shout out what's on the horizon for you. Any notable tournaments, you know, coming up outside of the one you're playing this week? Are you going to be on the Symetra Tour for the remainder of 2019? What's your schedule looking like?
Yeah. After this week, I'm going to play six. There's seven more events for the Symetra Tour, but I'm playing the last six events because I'm going to Peru for the Pan American Games. So I'm excited about that. I'm going to be representing Mexico. I think that's beginning of August. So we're playing in Lima, Peru, which I've never been. So I'm excited about. And yeah, so there's two players, two women and two men that are going from each country. And it's like a mini Olympics, in a way. So it'll be fun. And then the rest, yeah, it's the Symetra Tour that ends in October.
Very exciting. And you can follow along. Her Instagram is Ali Yaneza. It's A-L-E-L-L-A-N-E-Z-A. Alejandra, thanks for so much for joining us. We look forward to following your journey. And hopefully the next time we catch up with you will be when you have an LPGA Tour card. How's that sound?
Yeah, sounds like a good plan. And thanks for having me.
Chat there with Alejandra. Nothing quite like playing for your country, something neither of us, I think, will ever get to experience, Alex, in our
definitely.
Lives.
Absolutely not. Yes, that was really cool. Like, just telling that story, trying to mentally kind of put yourself in her shoes, that stepping up to the first tee and hearing the announcement with the Mexican flags flying. Really cool stuff. And Mike, I loved it when she shouted out her snack at the turn.
Yeah.
You don't think about it, because quite obviously, tacos are ubiquitous in Mexico, but tacos at the turn, like instead of the hot dog or the hamburger between 9 and 10, how great would that be? Have you ever got to have a taco on a golf course? I don't really think I have, to be honest.
You know what my problem is? The hot dog is sometimes risky enough from a golf course clubhouse. I'd be really concerned about doing a taco.
Yes, that's true. I'd probably pick a little bit, a slightly higher brow golf course to maybe order a taco on a golf course.
That said, I think a taco would be great at the turn.
Yeah, just simple, too. Chicken or beef fajita. Yeah. Don't have to go too many toppings. Yeah. It does the trick from a carb perspective.
It's easy to eat while you're driving the cart. You get in, you get it, you get out. It's not that bad.
Good stuff. Great chat with her, for sure. And we'll look forward to having her on again. I made this deal with all these players. I say, if you make it to, that's my standing exit statement with all of our interview guests. If you make it to the LPGA Tour, you're coming back on. So we're just sitting with these golfers in the pipeline here, excited to follow their dreams as they make it to the LPGA Tour.
Indeed. Let's turn our attention to my least favorite thing about this time of year.
Oh, yes.
It's NFL preseason.
It's back. I just recorded a football interview. I'm pumped. Yep. NFL preseason here. We had a very, very meaningless Hall of Fame game last Thursday night and a bunch of preseason games to start things off this weekend. Mike, I don't know. The one thing I will tell you that was the Hall of Fame game highlight was Vic Fangio, new head coach. He's been an assistant for 32 years in the NFL. Mike finally gets his nod as a head coach in the NFL. And he comes down with kidney stones the week of his first preseason game. You know it. He still coached. He coached the whole game. So shout out to Vic Fangio for powering through in his first moment as an NFL coach.
Well, everything I know about kidney stones, I know from Seinfeld.
Yes.
When Kramer
just
got
picture
it.
Kramer so, dying. So
that's all I know. And it would have been hilarious if halfway through the game he had to go to the back and relieve himself of the stones and just yelled it out while one of his players dropped the ball trying to catch it in the end zone. That would have been peak Seinfeld moment in real life.
Yes, indeed. So we're heading into week one of the preseason. There'll be some more games that we'll talk about and maybe some actual semi-football highlights next week. But I'll be looking for Hard Knocks episode one. That's going to be airing Tuesday night. So next week, we'll talk about what we saw from the crazy Oakland Raiders training camp. We're going to get a lot of John Gruden quotes in the next month or so from this show. So buckle up for that. Can't wait to hear him just behind closed doors with a mic and just camera time. That's always a dangerous thing.
It's going to be fantastic because he was always great when he was doing that one-on-one with QBs coming out of college.
Yes, so that's right.
It's
camp.
Going to be great to see what happens on Hard Knocks as it comes out. Let's talk about your boy, Tom Brady.
Oh, no.
He just signed a two-year extension.
Now, but did he, though? This is a weird one. There's a lot of Tom Brady gossip this week for anyone who wasn't paying attention. Also, quick shout-out. Happy birthday, Tom. Turned 42 on Saturday, forever young. But a lot of question now about what's going on with his future, maybe not only with the Patriots, but in the NFL. Mike, it comes out that he signs this extension through 2021, and there's kind of a sigh of relief for a few days. But as information trickles out, Mike, we realize that this is actually kind of somewhat of a flimsy extension. And within the fine print, Mike, this can be completely voided out by either party at the end of the 2019 season. So while on paper it looked like the Patriots agreed to an extension, Brady came out in a press conference a day or two later and said, well, it is what it is. I'm on a one-year deal right now, so we'll see what happens after this year. And that just absolutely scared the crap out of Patriots Nation and people like me. And then, you know, this real estate news getting me really concerned. Maybe selling the house.
I didn't hear anything about this.
Yeah, selling the house in the Boston area right now, Mike. Take a guess on that price tag for Tom Brady's mansion just outside of Boston. $39.5 million for him and Giselle's home that they're looking to move.
I was almost halfway there.
Yeah. So now we got news. He might be selling the Boston house. They're looking at schools in the Greenwich, Connecticut, New York suburb area for their kids.
You know,
a lot of talk that it might be over.
The Giants need wide receivers, so they're going to move Eli and what's-his-face there, Eli heir apparent, over receiver, and they'll put Tom Brady in under center, and they'll make the Super Bowl.
Over my dead body, does he ever play for the Giants or Jets? I'll absolutely incinerate if that does happen. But just the fact that he's looking for schools like this, and they're looking in Greenwich, and you and I know Greenwich, and that's a big-time retirement place. That's a big-time settle-down-and-do-nothing place. Sounding here for the Brady moves he's been making in the last few days.
I think what he's doing here is he's saying he's going to see how he feels at the end of the season, and then he's going to make the decision whether he's going to step away from the game or not, and if he wants to stay, because this isn't going to be the Patriots telling him to leave. This is going to be him.
Yeah.
If he wants to stick around for another season, he's got another season there, and then they can make that call again at the end of that season. So I think it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think it puts out the chance that this could be his last season in the NFL. So I'm going to try and mentally slowly come to terms with that in case that's a reality. But yeah, you're right. This could all just be a big poker game, and he could be, you know, looking to just hold his cards in for the next few months, see how this season goes, and see if he can go back to the board and get even more money for potentially the last couple of years of his career. He's been trying to get to 45, so we'll see if that's a reality. But we'll be watching the Tom Brady news all preseason for sure.
It will be interesting. Speaking of Boston, I don't know if you have anything that'll help me. There were some Red Sox on my floor, and I need to sweep them up.
Yeah, good one. Yeah, I mean, go ahead and lay it on me for a minute, because this was an ugly Red Sox-Yankees series last weekend for anyone from Boston.
Let's just put it bluntly. The Yankees are the best team in the American League, arguably one of the best teams in Major League Baseball, and there's nothing that's going to stop them from claiming another World Series trophy.
Look at you. Ricochet shot at the Houston Astros there, who went out and got...
Well, you know, what's really crazy here is that you think the Yankees, with all the injuries they've suffered this year, would not be where they are right now, but I think it just speaks to the testament of how good Brian Cashman really is. A lot of people think that Cashman sucks, especially coming out of the trade deadline where he did nothing.
Right.
He built a team and a farm system that can survive when your all-stars go down for injury.
Yeah, that depth that you're seeing it right now. We saw it in April when we were talking about those injuries at the start of the year, too.
Oh, yeah. And this is what made the Yankees so good in the late 90s when they had Derek Jeter and Andy Pettit and Mariano Rivera come up through that farm system, and then you supplement them with guys out there on the field that are veterans, and you have other guys that can step in and take that place. That's what he did then and was so good with it, and he's being able to do it again. So, you know, the Yankees are just a great team, and they really have built themselves for the future here. This is going to be another dynasty in the making. The question is, so many other good teams out there right now. Can they win as many as they did in the 90s?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's a very daunting statement there. I'll give you some panic statements of my own on the Red Sox end, which I know you'll love to hear. Yes. My panic statement is this season, sell the farm, shut down Chris Sale, shut down Nathan Eovaldi. Mookie Betts may not be back next year. He's going to be too expensive. I am putting the done tag on the Red Sox 2019 season. The defense is over. Here it is. Here we are in the second week of August, Mike. And I can't believe I'm saying that this early, but they've been absolutely lifeless in the past week and a half, struggling this week in their series against the horrible Kansas City Royals. That tells you all you need to know. I'm not seeing any near close to the same level of energy I saw from last year's club. And it looks like this season is all but a conclusion for the Red Sox at this point.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of surprised it took you this long to come to that conclusion, Alex.
I was just holding out as long as I possibly could. But hey, you know what it is? It's that football smell in the air. It's got me thinking about Tommy and the boys. So I'm willing to throw the Red Sox to the side because it's August.
Well, I'll keep telling you how great the Yankees are as we plod our way along toward the playoffs and to just continue to beat you guys down. So it'll be great. And with that in mind, that really brings us to the end of this week's episode.
Yeah, for sure. We'll look forward to all of that great gossip, sports headlines coming up as we get closer and closer to both college and NFL season kicking into full gear. So this has been another great edition of The Course of Life. Again, thanks to our guest. And we have a very exciting guest on next week. This one is for the parents, Mike. Anyone who's a parent, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle. If you have someone who is young and you are looking to get them into the game of golf, next week's episode and conversation in our featured interview is absolutely for you. So for Mike, I'm Alex. This has been another edition of The Course of Life. Everyone have a good week.